It is the Food Mensch, Arthur Schwartz, here to enlighten us. Oh, I like that. Hi, Arthur. How are you?
I'm hot, as is everybody else. And
Guess
truthfully,
what?
I cannot think of eating, much less cooking. But I am thirsty, and we do need to keep hydrated in this weather. So I ordered, I'd never do this, but it was a reason. I ordered an iced coffee in a restaurant recently and was shocked to find that my iced coffee was $7.50. Why? It was, quote, cold brewed. What that means is they throw the grinds in with cold water and let it sit for at least a day. And I have to say, it produces a very nice, strong coffee, but I don't really want to pay $7.50 for actually wasn't even a big glass. It was like a, 8 or 10 ounce glass. It wasn't very big. And it was a half full of ice to start. Anyway, it started me on the pursuit of iced coffee, which I like a lot in the summer. I never drink it in the winter, but there was a period in my life where I actually started the day with iced coffee because it was so hot. I had no air conditioning, all those reasons. Now I have air conditioning, so I have no excuse. But anyway, iced coffee is a thing in a lot of parts of the world. We do not own iced coffee here in the U.S., although I don't doubt that we probably drink more iced coffee than most places. For instance, in Vietnam, is a whole culture around coffee in general, and iced coffee in particular, and people do sit with their coffee and chat the way people used to before they had phones. I say that only because in Italy nowadays, you very often will see like three or four young people sit down at a cafe table together, and then they all take their phones out rather than talk to each other. I'm not sure what that's about. We've been talking to other friends who are not at the table, I guess. In any case, in Vietnam, they have very special coffee. And I came home with two little Vietnamese coffee drip makers. They're little, it has a name in Vietnamese. I don't know what it is. But you mean this little coffee maker. And you put the coffee in. And in a cylinder, mine is stainless steel, that can be made of other materials though, and you put it over a cup, and you pour. In my case, I have a little strainer that goes on top of the grinds to keep them down, and then you pour in water and let it drip through. You end up with a very pure tasting and very strong coffee, because most of the coffee grown and drunk in Vietnam is the variety called Robusta. We always look for in America, we're always looking for Arabica, which is the other variety, which is considered more refined. Robusta has an edge to it, it's a little strong and rough. But it works perfectly in Vietnam because, first of all, they drip the coffee into the cup, and second, if you're making iced coffee, you use condensed milk, sweetened condensed milk, which definitely takes the bitter edge off of the coffee. Now, in the U.S., when I came home from Vietnam and only wanted to drink Vietnamese coffee, I discovered it was almost impossible to find real Vietnamese coffee. And what the Vietnamese population here in Brooklyn, and I guess in other places as well, would drink in the U.S. was the coffee called Café du Monde. It's the New Orleans a brand of coffee, and it has some chicory in it, which gives it that sort of rough, bitter edge. And it's not a good imitation of Vietnamese coffee, but it'll do. And for a long time, that's what I used, Café du Monde, until I discovered there was some Vietnamese coffee in a Chinatown supermarket. But now, I just the other day. So this is meant to be to talk about this. Just the other day, I saw in my supermarket Nguyen brand, NG, however you spell it, NGYUEN, very common Vietnamese name, and that's the name of this coffee brand. Ends up, it's and why it's in my local supermarket, ends up it is Robusta beans from Vietnam, but roasted here in Brooklyn and being sold locally as Nguyen coffee. I don't know if it's being distributed. I wouldn't be surprised to see if you could buy it online. It's probably too expensive, but there you are. Cafe Du Monde is not so hard to find, and if you feel like you want to try a Vietnamese coffee, do a drip of Cafe Du Monde, nice strong coffee, and then add condensed milk to your taste, and that's already sweetened, so I don't put sugar in, and then pour that over crushed ice and shake, shake, shake. That reminds me of another iced coffee in Italy. They think this is very original, when we know it's not. They have something called shakerato. You go at this time of the year, you go into a cafe in Italy, you can order a shakerato. And that is a couple of shots of strong coffee poured over ice and shaken. I like it with milk. Shaken until it gets in like a cocktail shake. Well, a cocktail shaker is the same thing. A cocktail shaker. Until it gets nice and frothy, which it will. Certainly, the milk helps it get frothy, but even without milk, it gets frothy. And that's all a shakerato is. It's basically coffee, sweetened coffee shaken with ice. Now, that brings me to another shaken with ice coffee. In Greece, this is like a national drink. It's called frappé, using the French word for shaken. I think it means shaken. And a frappé in Greece is not to my liking especially, because it is made with Nescafé, instant coffee. I don't know. Maybe I'll try this again. I'll buy a small... I have very little use for instant coffee, although once in a while you can always add instant coffee to something chocolate to give it a little mocha flavor. Anyway, it's instant coffee. By the way, we have a history for the frappé. It was invented in 1957 by some guy who was working for Nescafe and wanted to make an iced coffee, but he didn't have hot milk, so he shook the Nescafe with cold milk until it got really foamy. And then added ice cubes, and of course sugar and milk, if that's what you like, and I think most Greeks do. In fact, they have a whole vocabulary for the sweetness of their frappé. You could say sketos, which means no sugar, metrios, which means medium sweetness, glikos, which means sweet, and megala, with milk. I've never seen one, be honest. I've been to Greece, and I've drunk frappés and in cafes. I've never seen one without milk, but I'm sure they exist. Anyway, it's Nescafe is the secret here. And it does have some other quality to it that regular coffee doesn't. So the foam it creates really stays for a long time. Unlike the shakerato, it doesn't. That deflates almost immediately. But somehow, I don't know what the science is here, but the normal recipe is, I would say, a teaspoon of Nescafe per, well, let's say, no, let's do a whole, you know, batch here. I would say a tablespoon of Nescafe. A lot depends on your ice cubes, I've discovered. I am into these enormous square ice cubes, but they do not work in this. For this, you need small ice cubes or crushed ice. In a glass, put a tablespoon of instant coffee. I would say 8 ounces of cold water. Sugar to taste, a couple teaspoons, I would say. A little milk. And shake, rattle, and roll. You know, just keep shaking it until it gets nice and foamy and thick. And pour this mixture into a glass. You can add more ice if you like. And that's it. So it really is just iced coffee shaken in a shaker. Anyway, that is... So we did frappe in Greece, shakerato in Italy, plain old iced coffee here. But here, I see iced coffee is becoming fetishized. You know, is it made with cold brew? drip. I mean, there's all this nonsense, I think, about, you know, the coffee. My morning coffee is made in a French press. And I have the French presses in different sizes. If I have company and I need to make a lot of coffee, I have a big one, too. So that I like that coffee. And that coffee, once it gets to room temperature, makes great iced coffee. Just pour it over ice. I don't usually sweeten mine, but I do put milk in. Now,
put cream
adult
in?
Beverages. Cream? I don't use cream very much.
Yeah, I mean, no. I just curious, because the French press, you have a proportion? I used to...
You know, I have a proportion, but it's for my little tiny...
It's visual. That's what I was asking, because I used to have to, in my dad's, when I would be in the city, blah, 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 try to figure out the appropriate for a smallish in his giant French press, and it always drove me nuts.
Well, so here's my measure of my little one is I put in, it's usually three heaping teaspoons of coffee, usually. And it comes up an eighth of an inch above the plastic black stand it goes
right
on. So I know if it's got an eighth of an inch above it, I'm in good shape. For my big one, I hate to say, I eyeball it.
Exactly. That was a trick question, because in fact my view is that this is it's a visual. Don't ask.
It's very individual. Also, how strong you like your coffee, know, do you mind bitterness or not? I've been buying different. Let me say, I like Lavazza, but it's crazy expensive. Not as crazy expensive as Ely Cafe, but crazy expensive. So I don't buy it unless it's on sale. Now, it's often on a very serious sale, like from $15 down to $8. And when it's $8 for a 12-ounce packet, I buy it. But I also buy a coffee that's roasted on Staten Island and sold by my butcher, who's also a grocer. And that's only $10 a pound. It's a bargain, a real bargain. And the other coffee that I sometimes buy is from my fancy supermarket, and there I think they're up to $12 a pound. That's still a pretty good buy, because coffee's gotten really expensive. And it's a full pound, not a 12-ounce bag. However, I just did buy, for the first time in many years, coffee at Costco, and it was only $7 and a small change per pound, $21 something for a 3-pound can. And I got to say, it's at least as good as my Staten Island roasted coffee. It's Colombian, comes in a can. That's it. So anyway, I just thought that, it's worth it. A try if it's only $7 a pound, and you know what? I'm going to buy it again. So I may buy two cans because it lasts a long time in a can. I have to go back to Costco. But back to adult beverages, which of course I'm into. My most refreshing drink of the moment is a Campari Spritz. Now, the Aperol Spritz has become international. And I remember in the 1990s, when it first started getting popular in Italy, that we all thought it was, quote, the sissy cocktail, because it's if you didn't really want alcohol. What it is, the Aperol Spritz, let's start with the Aperol. First of all, Aperol is a very lightly alcoholic liqueur from northeast Italy, actually I think Padua. And it has a citrus base, a little bitter, and a beautiful red color. And then I'm sure there are spices and herbs in there. In Italy, they'd say secret herbs. But it's very, very mild. I think only 11% alcohol. Now, you put some Aperol in a glass. You pour on top Prosecco, which itself is a very light alcohol wine, but fizzy, wonderfully fizzy. And most, I have to say, Prosecco is pretty inexpensive, and I don't mind adulterating it with other things. Anyway, Aperol, Prosecco, and then it's topped off with seltzer, with the spritz. Now, I have to say, the proportions for this are in the window of the liquor store around the corner from me. Just as I was thinking, oh, maybe I should talk about this, there it was. But I don't make it the way they make it in the window of the liquor store. And it ends up, this is sort of the standard proportions, is two parts Aperol to three parts Prosecco and one part seltzer. I make it with Campari, and that would be too much Campari for me if I did two parts Campari. So I've been doing in an 8-ounce glass, maybe it's a 10-ounce glass, but whatever, in that neighborhood. I do 1 1.5-ounce shots of Campari, and then I 2/3 fill the glass with Prosecco. So that's probably 4 times the amount of Campari. And then I top it off with seltzer. And I do stir it. Some people like to see the red on the bottom, and it does make layers, but no, I like to stir it. Very refreshing. If you want to put it on ice, you can. But if the Prosecco is cold and the seltzer is cold, you don't need to put ice in. It's very, very refreshing. It's usually garnished with a wedge of orange because Aperol is made with orange. You know, I don't bother with the garnish. I'm drinking it at home, watching the news in the evening. It's a little bit of fortification for the bad news. Not a lot. Not high in alcohol at all. And by the way, so when you're shopping for Prosecco, if you're into this spritz mode the way I am, look for a brand that has a screw top, because the wine doesn't go bad very quickly, but the fizz dissipates pretty quickly. So, but if you have a screw top, you can just use what you want and then put it back in the refrigerator. Even on its side, it'll hold. And that's about
how
it.
Long, just out of curiosity, since I've never had fizz success once I've opened the screw top, what's the you got? No, what is the survival time?
Oh, I don't know. I never needed to survive longer than the fizz. I don't know, a couple days.
Okay. All right.
You know, I mean, not weeks. No. But, you know, once you open the bottle, you want to keep going, don't you? I mean, I could drink more than one of these in an evening. They're very dilute. You know, after all, it's not a lot of alcohol. But it is a lot of flavor and a lot of hydration. You just chalk it up to, I need to stay hydrated.
I don't know whether this is just yet another weirdness or not, but I have never found fizz a success for hydration for me.
Fizz?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't know if I was hydrated or not hydrated, but I do enjoy a spritz. So, and as I said, by the way, you can make it more dilute if you want by just using less Prosecco or more seltzer. The spritz comes from the Austrian word for the seltzer is a spritz. And this is from the far northeast of Italy that was, in fact, part of the Austrian Empire at one time. I can claim to be Italian because of that, even though if you look at any of my family's papers, they said they came from Austria. But it's now part of Italy. I have a funny story. For the years ago, on Cecilia's farm, which is an agriturismo, people come to stay for even a week on the farm. They have a swimming pool. It's very nice. Historic district. Anyway, this really nice family was there with kids, mother, father, and some kids. And when they left, Cecilia said, oh, such nice people for Austrians. Because they were from the north. You know.
They came from the north. They came from the south.
Yeah, well, Milanese, you know, the Milanese, I mean, this word is used all over Europe to mean a fried cutlet of meat. But it comes, actually, it's Wiener Schnitzel. Milanese is Wiener Schnitzel. It was part of Austria, Milano.
So. Absolutely, and anybody, it is very funny who, it's very funny how those connections, or if you will, disconnections are made, because you can line up some people, and you can say, hey, would you like chicken milanese or veal, and oh yes, please. Okay, well, would you like some Wiener Schnitzel? And it's not because of the pork cutlet. It's just there's a lack of connection. I mean, the two things, they are kissing cousins. They're not just
Yes,
related.
they are. And by the way, what's funny is, to me, is that schnitzel of various kinds, not just Wiener, not just Vienna or with meat, but fish and other schnitzel, has become a national dish of Israel. It's one, I think, one of the only things left over from the Ashkenazi world in Israel, because most of the food in Israel is Middle Eastern food, or influenced by North Africa or the Middle East, not from Europe. You don't get stuffed cabbage in Tel Aviv. Well, maybe you can, but it would be something special. Anyway, makes me want to drink an iced coffee now.
Makes me hungry, period.
Makes you hungry. Yeah, I have this weather is very good for my diet. I don't need any drug to reduce my appetite.
And may
And
I just
the things I
say,
want to eat
Edward?
are very healthy. In fact, right now I'm soaking some bulgur wheat to make a grand bowl of tabbouleh, not just with parsley and wheat, but other ingredients as well, olives, capers, tomato. I'm thinking of even throwing some chickpeas in the mix. And then at the last minute, I put in some tuna, lemon juice, and olive oil. It's very delicious,
It's
I
a
gotta
feast.
say.
That
It
is a
is a
hot
feast
weather
in a
feast.
bowl and very high fiber, relatively low calorie. You don't need a lot of oil, just good oil. And yeah, so anyway, it's in process because the wheat is soaking as we speak. What I do is I put in, I'm making a big bowl, so I use the half a cup of the dried bulgur, and then I pour in boiling water and let it sit until it gets to room temperature. And the bulgur will expand to at least 2 cups, if not a little more. And then I squeeze out any excess water and start mixing. I was able to get a huge bunch of gorgeous parsley yesterday. So.
I just have to say for the archives that you have always been consistent about what you eat and do not eat in warm weather. And I think
I
that that is
know. I know. I drink a lot.
good.
All
All right.
righty. Everybody take care. Stay cool and stay dry.
And thank you, Food Mensch. We really appreciate you. Love to Bob. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch on Robin Hood Radio.